Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. Top-ranking U.S. general says he would not recommend buffer and no-fly zones in Syria where people fleeing their homes can be protected from air attacks by Syrian government forces. General Lloyd Austin, head of the U.S. Central Command, told the Senate Armed Services Committee Wednesday a ground force would be needed to protect the refugees, but that such a force is not available at this time. "This is a horrible tragedy," the general said. "We would hope, as these refugees continue to be disadvantaged, that we see more countries joining in to assist." The Syrian conflict, which began in March 2011 as peaceful protests before being met by a harsh crackdown, spiraling into a multi-party civil war, has forced half of all Syrians from their homes. Yemeni government spokesman says Yemen's cabinet has returned to the country after months spent in self-imposed exile in Saudi Arabia. The spokesman said on Wednesday the cabinet ministers will work out of the southern port city of Aden with the goal of restoring stability to the country. There was no indication that President Abd Rabu Mansour Hadi was set to return. He fled Yemen earlier this year. No drones will be allowed in New York, Washington, or Philadelphia later this month when Pope Francis visits the faithful in those cities. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration announced that all unmanned aircraft will be prohibited in those places, as well as their surrounding communities, from September 22nd through the 27th. Those areas have been designated as no-drone zones. In addition to stops at Congress, the White House, and U.N. headquarters, the Pope will lead Mass in all three cities, including an outdoor Mass in Philadelphia, with about 2 million worshipers expected to attend. This is VOA News. Living spaces and office buildings continue to sprout up all over Nigeria to meet the needs of a growing population. But many of these structures are built with no oversight of substandard materials, leading to collapses that experts say could be avoided. Chris Stein reports from Lagos.
Nearly a year to the day after a large dormitory under construction collapsed in a Lagos suburb, another building collapse claimed lives in Nigeria. This time it was an Islamic school in the village of Bukuru in north-central Plateau State. Six people were killed, five of them children. It was raining and the roof of the two-story school fell on students studying inside. A local leader, Bala Muhammad, told VOA that though villagers were aware that the building was structurally unsound, there was no other school in the area. Experts say substandard materials and shoddy oversight have led to numerous building collapses in Africa's most populous country. Since the dormitory collapsed last September, Farron Loy says five buildings in his area have partially collapsed. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Soldiers with Burkina Faso's presidential guard have detained the country's interim prime minister and president. Military sources told VOA's French to Africa service that soldiers broke into a council of ministers meeting in the capital Ouagadougou and arrested President Michel Kafando, Prime Minister Yacouba Isaac Zida, and other members of the government. Reuters news agency quotes a senior military source as saying the soldiers made no immediate demands. The incident comes less than a month before Burkina Faso holds presidential and parliamentary elections. The International Olympic Committee has announced five finalists to hold the 2024 Summer Olympic Games. The four European cities of Budapest, Hamburg, Paris, and Rome, and the U.S. West Coast city of Los Angeles. The IOC made its announcement soon after the midnight Tuesday deadline for contenders. IOC President Thomas Bach called the finalists outstanding cities and predicted the race will be strong and fascinating. The final decision is to be announced in 2017. Billionaire real estate titan Donald Trump will be at center stage Wednesday during the second U.S. Republican presidential debate, with 10 opponents trying to cut into his lead for the party's 2016 nomination. In advance of the debate at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library near Los Angeles, some of the contenders say Trump's views are, or were in past years, more aligned with liberal Democratic positions and out of the mainstream for the dominant conservative Republican base of voters. CBS New York Times poll this week showed him with 27% support, just ahead of the 23% for another political novice, former neurosurgeon Ben Carson. I'm Bob Doty in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Rights group Amnesty International condemned alleged abuses by Boko Haram and Cameroonian security forces in a report released Wednesday. The Nigerian militant sect stepped up attacks in northern Cameroon last year, prompting Cameroonian troops to join a regional offensive.
That's Moki Edwin Kinzika reporting from Yaoundé. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, soldiers from Burkina Faso's presidential guard today detained the interim president, the prime minister, and all members of his cabinet. The number of migrants crossing illegally into Hungary drops steeply, while a few dozen were reported to have crossed into Croatia from Serbia. And President Muhammadu Buhari says his government is negotiating with militant Boko Haram for the release of more than 200 schoolgirls. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Soldiers from Burkina Faso's presidential guard today detained interim president Michel Kafando, the prime minister, and all members of his cabinet. VOA's French to Africa service reports that no demands have yet been made. The presidential guard is expected to make an announcement this evening. The National Assembly president is expected to hold a press conference tonight to denounce the apparent coup. 2 days ago, a commission proposing government reforms recommended disbanding the powerful 1,200-member force of the presidential guard. The guard was a pillar of the 27-year rule of President Blaise Compaoré, until he was toppled from power in 2014. Hundreds of migrants streamed into the European Union today through the cornfields of Croatia. Welcome there after Hungary blocked its border with Serbia and fired tear gas and sprayed water cannons as migrants still try to enter its territory. A Hungarian court convicted an Iraqi man of illegally crossing the border fence with Serbia the day before, ordered him expelled and excluded him from Hungary for a year. Croatia's prime minister criticized Hungary's actions and said his country is prepared for the influx of migrants fleeing Syria and other war-torn Middle East countries. As the migrants walked into Croatia from Serbia's western border, authorities urgently dispatched demining experts to the border to mark minefields left from the Balkan Wars of the 1990s. Hungary defended its border closing, saying it was protecting its territory against the influx of migrants looking for a better economic opportunity, not fleeing persecution in their homelands. Still more migrants sought entry to the EU elsewhere, walking from Salzburg, Austria, into Germany, or through Lithuania on their way to Scandinavian countries. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad blamed Europe for its biggest mass of migrants since World War II. He accused European of supporting Syrian terrorists, his term for several groups trying to overthrow his regime. While welcoming several hundred thousand refugees, German Chancellor Angela Merkel's cabinet called for expansion of the country's naval operations in the Mediterranean to block human traffickers from ferrying more migrants from Libya and elsewhere in rickety, overcrowded boats to the shores of Greece and Italy. U.S. lawmakers of both major political parties tell VOA the United States must help address Syria's humanitarian crisis and the massive outpouring of migrants. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman has more.
The chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Bob Corker, says the United States cannot turn a blind eye to the plight of Syrian migrants.
As a nation, I hate to say it, we bear some responsibility for what's happening. The type of things that are occurring are things you would never imagine would occur in the year 2015, maybe in 1015, but not 2015.
Like many Republicans, Corker says inaction by the Obama administration helped fuel the current crisis. Some Democrats admit that, in hindsight, a more assertive U.S. policy toward the conflict in Syria would have been beneficial. The main culprit, according to Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy, is Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Leahy applauded President Barack Obama's plan to admit 10,000 Syrian migrants.
The Europeans have been very good in stepping up, but we're going to have to also, take in refugees here.
Fellow Democrat Tim Kaine called the administration's plan a good start.
When you compare that against what Lebanon is doing, that is housing over 1 million, Turkey over 2 million, Jordan 1 million, I just think that there's a lot more that we can do.
Senator Corker said President Obama has broad discretion in deciding how many Syrians to take in, but that Congress has a role to play as well, particularly when it comes to appropriating funds needed to support the effort. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
Rights group Amnesty International has launched a report titled Human Rights Under Fire: Attacks and Violations in Cameroon's Struggle with Boko Haram. The report says 400 civilians have been killed and that a heavy-handed response by security forces and inhumane prison conditions have led to dozens of more deaths. Moki Edwin Kinziga reports from Yaoundé.
Amnesty International's researcher for Central Africa, Ilaria Allegrozzi, says both Boko Haram insurgents and Cameroonian soldiers fighting terrorism have caused great suffering.
We talk about killings, we talk about kidnappings, we talk about destruction, widespread destruction of public and private properties.
Amnesty says Boko Haram has killed nearly 380 people in northern Cameroon since mid-2014. Militants have also burned hundreds of homes. Allegrozzi says although security forces have played a very important role protecting civilians, they are at the same time also committing abuses.
There's killings, destruction of properties, arbitrary arrests, and also inhuman prison conditions, especially in Maroua, where you have a population of some 1,300 prisoners. Half of them are Boko Haram suspected, and they live in very difficult conditions. The prison is overcrowded, there's lack of hygiene and lack of health care. Some of the prisoners are even held in chains till today.
Amnesty says 130 men and boys have disappeared at the hands of Cameroonian soldiers and 25 have died in custody. The rights group is calling for international investigations. Cameroon's government spokesman declined to comment on the report Wednesday, saying authorities are preparing their response. Moki Edwin Kinziga for VOA News, Yaoundé.
President Muhammadu Buhari of Nigeria told the French news agency his government is negotiating with militant Boko Haram for release of more than 200 schoolgirls. The students were abducted more than a year ago from the town of Chibok and have not been heard from since. While meeting with President Francois Hollande and other French officials in Paris this week, Buhari says he is offering amnesty for some militants now in government custody if Boko Haram leaders will release the girls. In Nigeria, the Associated Press Wire Service says a Nigerian military official has announced the rescue of at least a dozen women and children after taking control of a Boko Haram camp in Borno State. Colonel Sani Kukasheka says the abductees were rescued yesterday. He did not say where they had been abducted or what their condition is. Since his May election, Mr. Buhari has found it difficult to end Boko Haram's reign of terror. Thousands of Nigerians have died and more than 1 million have been displaced by the violence in three northeastern states and in neighboring countries. Well, living spaces and office buildings continue to sprout all over Nigeria to meet the needs of a growing population, but many of these buildings are built with no oversight or substandard materials, leading to collapses that experts say could be avoided. Chris Stein reports from Lagos.
Nearly a year to the day after a large dormitory under construction collapsed in a Lagos suburb, Another building collapse claimed lives in Nigeria. This time it was an Islamic school in the village of Bukuru in north-central Plateau State. Six people were killed, five of them children. It was raining, and the roof of the two-story school fell on students studying inside. A local leader, Bala Muhammad, told VOA that though villagers were aware that the building was structurally unsound, there was no other school in the area. Experts say substandard materials and shoddy oversight have led to numerous building collapses in Africa's most populous country. Last year's dormitory collapse at the church of megapastor T.B. Joshua was among the deadliest, claiming 116 lives. Habu Maman is an engineer in the city of Bauchi, about 200 kilometers from Bukuru. He says some building contractors use poor techniques or materials, like improper cement grades, and pay off inspectors.
The oversight, that is supervision, is very, very poor, and they are in most cases compromised.
Authorities elsewhere in Nigeria have managed to make progress against faulty buildings. Ibrahim Ferenloy is the Southwest Regional Coordinator for the National Emergency Management Agency. His jurisdiction includes Africa's largest city, Lagos. He says in 2012 and 2013, there were about 52 building collapses in the Southwest. But that number has decreased since his agency began urging residents to report substandard buildings.
We, at a time within 6 months, we got an alert of about 500 information about different type of building under distress situation.
Still, buildings keep coming down. Since the dormitory collapsed last September, Ferenloy says five buildings in his area have partially collapsed. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Coming up on 17 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, Mexico's foreign minister arrived in Cairo today. She will question President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi about circumstances surrounding the accidental bombing of and resulting deaths of eight Mexican tourists by Egyptian forces. Four Egyptians were also among the dead. Foreign Minister Claudia Ruiz Massu has called deplorable the aerial attack and deaths of a dozen tourists on a safari in Egypt's western desert. Ruiz and members of families of the Mexican victims visited survivors this morning at Dar al-Fuad Hospital. She said she flew to Egypt to seek clarification of the events from Egyptian officials and to return survivors and the eight deceased back to Mexico. There were 22 passengers, Mexicans and Egyptians, in the convoy. 10 were wounded. The vehicles were destroyed. Egyptian Foreign Minister Sameh Shoukry says the government will investigate the matter. Shoukry said the facts of the military attack are confusing. Egyptian authorities earlier claimed the safari convoy had not requested permission to enter a restricted territory. The government has been pursuing Islamic State terrorists in the region. A provincial governor in central Burundi has told the Associated Press more than 100 men have been arrested in the last 2 days as suspected recruits to a rebel movement. Venant Manirambona of Gitega province says the men were arrested yesterday and today as they tried to relocate to the southern part of the nation. No rebel group has been identified, but the government claims recent rebel attacks on military outposts. Burundi has been in political turmoil over President Pierre Nkurunziza's re-election to a third term. The government says it has put down one coup attempt. More than 100 have died in street clashes in Bujumbura, the capital. Stephen Mondo of the UN Refugee Agency says hundreds of civilians have recently been fleeing to neighboring countries as clashes escalate in Bujumbura. UN officials estimate more than 180,000 Burundians have fled the country in the last 5 months. Zimbabwe's opposition is calling for President Robert Mugabe to resign, saying he is no longer fit for office. This comes one day after the 91-year-old president read the wrong speech to parliament. Shebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
The president's office issued an apology Tuesday after the president delivered a speech he had already read in parliament 3 weeks before. His office said the president would deliver the correct speech to lawmakers Wednesday. But Zimbabwe's main opposition party said the mistake could not be overlooked so easily. Here is Obed Gutu, spokesman for the Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, speaking to journalists on Wednesday.
With respect to our president, at the very good ripe age of 91, I think has seen better days, and it's a clear indication that he is no longer fit for purpose. And in fact, if Zimbabwe was a functional democracy, Parliament should actually proceed to invoke Section 96 of the Constitution of Zimbabwe. He should actually be impeached. He's now unable, clearly unable, to discharge his duties as the head of state.
Opposition MPs are also demanding the government explain how the president came to read the wrong speech. In the end, Mugabe did not come to Parliament Wednesday. Instead, Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa came and asked lawmakers to withdraw the wrong speech from the official record and place it with the correct one. There's visually no chance the president will heed the calls for him to step down. Mugabe has ruled Zimbabwe with an iron hand since the country won independence from Great Britain 35 years ago. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Thank you, Sebastian. Well, Zimbabwe authorities have filed smuggling charges against the safari guide who earlier helped a U.S. dentist kill Cecil, a protected black-maned lion popular among visitors to Hwange National Park. Police arrested Theo Bronkhorst in Bulawayo yesterday for allegedly trying to smuggle 29 sable antelope into South Africa. He is to appear in court today. Bronkhorst and three South Africans were captured by Zimbabwe park authorities when the vehicles containing the wild antelope became mired in the mud of the Limpopo River. Park authorities say the antelope are worth $384,000 in the illicit South African market. In July, Bronkhorst served as safari guide for dentist James Walter Palmer when park authorities say they lured Cecil out of the protection of a national park to kill him. Bronkhorst faces the earlier charges at a September 28th trial. Pope Francis makes his first trip to the United States next week with stops in Washington, D.C., New York, and Philadelphia. During his visit, the pontiff will address a joint session of Congress and is expected to speak on the environment, among other issues. He recently released an encyclical or papal letter on the environment. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The encyclical, entitled On Care for Our Common Home, describes the planet as our sister, Mother Earth. He writes the Earth cries out because of the harm inflicted on her by irresponsible use and abuse of the goods with which God has endowed her. What's more, he says, is that people have come to see themselves as lords and masters, entitled to plunder her at will. Pope Francis's encyclical has been praised by many environmentalists, but criticized by those who say the Pope should concentrate on religious matters. Jerry Cotis will assist Pope Francis when he says Mass in Washington September 23rd at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception. He's an official with Interfaith Power and Light, a nonprofit organization concerned about climate change. Cotis, a deacon, will aid in the Catholic sacrament of the Eucharist, in a sense, a sacrificial meal.
In the papal Mass, I have been given the wonderful blessing and opportunity to be at the Mass as a deacon, and I will be distributing Eucharist, either the body of Christ or one of the chalices with the blood of Christ, to the attendees.
CODIS is a retired environmental scientist, working for many years with the U.S. Department of Energy and the Environmental Protection Agency. He says the Pope brings a fresh new energy to environmental issues, including climate change.
He calls things as they are, and he says these issues of climate change and our call to care for our common home are moral issues. He said technology is part of the answer, but we ourselves must change. We must transform our hearts. We must change and alter our lifestyles.
He says the Pope believes the United States must set an example as a protector of the environment. He says the U.S. consumes a lot of resources and contributes to climate change.
When we look to our brothers and sisters in Africa and other parts of the developing world, we have, he says, a tremendous obligation to see ourselves as one, to see ourselves united as part of this integral ecology, and therefore we have to do more than our share to care for these issues and care for our brothers and sisters who are not as able to adapt and change.
CODIS is president of Our Lady of the Pines Catholic Church in Conifer, Colorado. He describes his religious beliefs and his scientific training as having a beautiful connection.
I've spent 35 years working on many of these issues from a scientific perspective and an environmental policy perspective. Now, with Pope Francis's leadership, I'm able to at least try to connect with people on a moral, religious basis, looking at our common connections from whatever faith tradition people are coming from. They see the call to care for God's creation in these traditions.
There have been many reports of Pope Francis having a degree in chemistry and is therefore a scientist. However, the publication National Catholic Reporter says that's not true. It says that Pope Francis studied chemistry and worked as a chemist prior to entering the seminary, but never graduated from university prior to entering the seminary. He has what it says is more like a certificate from a U.S. community college. However, the deacon says, Francis can still speak to the issues.
The issues that we're talking about today in terms of our air, climate, water, these are issues that are life issues, he says. These are issues that affect the poor and the vulnerable first. And as a religious leader of faith and morals, he is perfectly aligned to speak for those who cannot speak for themselves.
The Pope takes his name from St. Francis of Assisi, who gave thanks for what he called Brother Sun and Sister Moon. In his encyclical on the environment, Pope Francis writes that people should approach nature and the environment with an openness to awe and wonder. Otherwise, he says, their attitude will be that of masters, consumers, ruthless exploiters, unable to set limits on their immediate needs. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On Straight Talk Africa, Shaka Sali goes one-on-one with Uganda's Minister for Foreign Affairs, Sam Kutesa, the outgoing President of the United Nations General Assembly. The 69th session ends Tuesday. Mr. Kutesa will be with us live next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on Straight Talk Africa. That's next time on VOA Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria kills thousands of people each year, but there are some simple things you can do to protect your family. If you can, put screens in your windows. A simple screen can keep disease-carrying mosquitoes out of your home. If you go outside, wear light-colored clothing and long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. After it rains, empty all containers of standing water. The water in just one discarded tire can become a breeding ground for thousands of mosquitoes. Make sure your home is clear of debris and anything that holds water, including discarded cans, water containers, and rubbish. Empty containers that livestock drink from regularly so that mosquitoes cannot breed there.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.